And a good rainy Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Loaded show to wrap up the week. We're going to have a lot of fun and cover a lot of ground. Like I said, it's probably going to be a wet one. Maybe wet here, or today, tomorrow, and maybe even Sunday. So keep an umbrella nearby, probably for the next 3 days. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick will join us in just a bit. Chase McCabe is out in parts unknown. If you see him, tell him we've got a show to do. And Elijah Campbell.
Hey, I'm here.
Oh, hey, how you doing? And Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, where he probably feels like he never left. Actually, he's had that feeling before.
Oh,
truly.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Yeah, like last week.
I was going to say, yeah, for like the whole week.
Like where you never left.
That's right. This place has gotten a lot of me.
Has there been a lot of candles that have been lit since last week has come to conclusion between you and Porth and whoever else was camping out at the radio station? Has there been a lot of candles and some scent, fresh air, a lot of windows maybe being opened or doors opened.
Or sage, I guess.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving came in here and cleansed the place as soon as I left.
He came in with his walking stick and his sage?
He came in with the walking stick and sage and literally had to exorcise this building of all the demons that happened the week before.
He's so weird.
That's fantastic.
He's so weird. He's such a weird dude.
Imagine being the security of a NBA arena, and this one of the players walks in with sage and a walking stick and is just lighting it.
Well, don't forget, he lit the sage in Boston, did he not?
He did, yeah.
Which, you know, I'm pretty sure that's a no-no in arenas. I'm pretty sure you can't light something up and, you know, go walking around the floor.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
A red Auerbach cigar is the last thing that's been lit in those buildings. And I think they want to keep
true.
It that way until Kyrie changed that trend.
Yeah, I'd say that's very
He's
very
changed
true.
It, all right.
Well, I don't know if he's changed it. It just happened.
Yeah.
He's a weird cat. But anyway, so you did answer. So is that a yes or a no at the radio station? Or is it just still got a big dark cloud and a funk hanging over it?
Oh, no. We lit some candles. We
okay.
cleansed it. Awesome. It's a new building. New us, new building.
It's been cleansed.
New us, new building.
Right, because the worst is that you guys go clean up and you come back and it's like, whoa.
They walk right back into it. It's like nothing ever happened.
It's like a stain on the floor from where one of you was laying.
Couch is destroyed. Chairs are flipped over. Like, I don't remember doing this.
Oh, man. Well, we've had a good conversation with Joe Lenardi. This week we've had some bubble talk this week, talking about Tennessee and other teams. I gave you some odds on some bubble teams. You know, we also had Michigan and Ohio State a part of our pick six last Friday. We all know that Gonzaga and Baylor are really, really good. Really good. But
yes,
Michigan last night and their win over Iowa, Michigan's only lost once. Elijah, I'll start with you because you watch it more closely than anybody. Of those three, I'm not talking about record. I don't care about rankings or records or indexes. I'm talking about through your eyes. Rank Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan for the tournament. Who is going to rank them by who you think is going to go the furthest, cut down the nets, however you want to take it. But rank those three.
Ooh, it's tough, but Michigan certainly they've earned themselves to be in the conversation, but I would go Baylor, Gonzaga, and Michigan. Even though Baylor had a tough time against Iowa State, they had that weird like 3 week layoff where they had a lot of COVID trouble. But when they're at their best, offensively and defensively, they're the most complete team and probably the deepest. And they're shooting like 44% from three. Like, they shoot the ball lights out. They move the ball really well. Gonzaga is a close second, and Michigan has weaseled their way into third. And as good as Michigan is, when you're talking about Gonzaga and Baylor, Gonzaga might be the best offense in college basketball I've ever seen. And then Baylor, in terms of being a complete team, is just so much better defensively than both of them that they could stop either of them. So I'd give Baylor the edge at one. And then Gonzaga is a close two, and then I'd put Michigan three.
But you're not going to factor in strength of schedule?
Oh, I am, yeah,
the
for sure.
Murderer's row that Michigan's had to go.
Yeah,
thing. Are you telling me Gonzaga and Baylor would have just one loss if they were in the Big Ten?
Absolutely. That's how good both of those teams are.
Okay.
Yeah. Gonzaga right now has got two lottery picks. in their front court, too. And Corey Kispert's having an incredible year, but no one's talking about it as much because Jalen Suggs has been that good and because they have five or six guys that can all score the ball. I mean, Andrew Nembhard comes off the bench for them, and he was the SEC Freshman of the Year and probably would be starting on both Baylor and Michigan. So that just shows how good Gonzaga and Baylor are, too. I mean, I'd love to see all three of those teams in the Final Four because those are the three best teams, without a doubt. Because all three of them have kind of separated themselves. But I do think, yeah, Gonzaga and Baylor would definitely have one or two losses, maybe less. I mean, especially Baylor, because they can D up on anybody.
I know the easy answer to this question is, you know, when I say, you know, how shocked are you that Juwan Howard has been, you know, this good as head coach at Michigan? It's easy to say yes because nobody expected one loss, but I mean, did you expect any type of, like, because I didn't know about that hire. I'm like, this, he has no coaching experience. He's not that far removed from the NBA. And to see it, I mean, I know the program, I guess, was left in pretty good shape, but this is amazing.
The best thing he did was surround himself with assistant coaches that have had tons of head coaching experience. I mean, the best example is his head assistant, Phil Martelli, and the guy coached at St. Joe's for, what, 20 years? At St. Joe's for a long time. I mean, that's a pretty good head assistant to have for someone who's never held a coaching position in college basketball. And if you watch Michigan, too, like Vanderbilt, they run some really good sets. Like, their offensive sets are really, really good, and it's very modernized. A lot of the stuff that you see that Michigan does is implemented in the NBA. It's kind of
a lot
like
better than Tennessee's offense.
A whole lot better than Tennessee's. They're not settling for contested mid-range jumpers on 35% of their possessions like Tennessee does. They are very good with the possessions they have. They're efficient in the way they use them, and they move the ball a hell of a lot better than Tennessee does. And Vanderbilt's getting that same way. I guess the biggest difference between Michigan and Vanderbilt is that Michigan, obviously, in the last 5 years leading up to this, has recruited a lot better. And
they also got some transfers.
They had some transfers, exactly. And there's a lot more continuity with this Michigan group, too, because, I mean, Eli Brooks and Isaiah Livers have felt like they've been at Michigan forever. They're like the Perry Ellis's of that conference. I mean, they've been there for quite a long time, and it's been a benefit to Michigan to have those guys there. But watching Michigan on offense, I mean, Juwan Howard's implemented a lot of modern NBA stuff that fits his team. He's done an incredible job, and the fact that he's been able to counteract his lack of experience by hiring the right people in the right spots is a really good explanation as to how good Michigan has been this year.
I know one thing. John Beilein, man, he's looking real smart, doing great with Cleveland. Oh, wait. No, he's not.
Well, he got paid. So he got paid really well.
He did.
He's
but that was still weird.
Big Ten Network.
He's set for life.
Is that what he's doing? He's with the Big Ten Network?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw him doing some post game last night after Northwestern Minnesota.
Predators fall last night in Detroit to the Red Wings, 5-2. After tying it up less than 3 minutes into the third period, Eric Kalla got his first of the year, and then Detroit tacked on three goals in the third, including an empty netter there at the end, and they fall 5-2. So not the results that they were looking for, something we talked about yesterday a lot, and how vitally important it was going to be to really come into this weekend on a high, right? A three-game winning streak, and because these next 3 weeks are going to be brutal. They're going to be tough. And obviously it didn't play out the way that, you know, we talked about. And unfortunately they fell, and they came away with 0 points from last night's contest.
Yeah, and it was, you know, don't let the final score fool you. It was close for a good while. And but then, you know, you got that weird goal by Sam Gagne. There was a tiny little opening that he squeaked it through. And so I know that, you know, you look at that one and go, well, you certainly want that back. Pekka did not have his best game by any means. He made some saves, but then there were some that you go, you got to have those. When that happens, you have to have the rest of the team step up, and they just didn't do that. And so Detroit played their game and closed it out in the third period, but yeah, you know, there were times where it was like, all right, this is going to just be a similar to Tuesday, but with more scoring, just a back and forth affair. But then Detroit able to pull away in the third. And if you had Sam Gagne on your parlay card getting a hat trick, then you probably didn't. But good for you if you did. So his first three goals of the year.
Yeah, I thought Detroit, quite honestly, wanted it a little bit more.
Yep.
They were dictating a lot more of the pace than I really wanted them to. I thought they were dictating a little bit more of the game. Don't forget, I mean, they must have clanged three or four. I mean, probably four off the post.
Oh, yeah. The post was Pekka's best friend last night,
there's
too.
No doubt. I mean, Dylan Larkin couldn't. Well, he's got a lot of money. Maybe he could have bought a goal, but you know, for whatever reason, he needed that post to be about an inch or two wider, and he has a couple of goals last night. But there's no doubt the two Gagne goals before the empty netter. I don't count that. The two Gagne goals certainly Pekka would like to have back. Just a you know a weird fluky play off his skate that just goes in the back of the net, and then, like you said, I think the hole was literally the size of the puck. I mean,
right.
It felt like a carnival game. It felt like a game at the fair where you shoot the basket, right, and the basket is the exact same size as the ball. So basically it has to be the most perfect shot ever. It's going to ring out, right? It's not a normal size rim. It's
yeah.
a rim that's the size of the ball that you're shooting. And so you have to be perfect for it to go in. It's a very difficult shot, and that's literally how that played out. I mean, he had to be perfect. He found just the right spot. Pekka is up against the post and in position, and yet there's this little
tiny
hole, little tiny opening, and the puck found that little tiny opening, and it went in. So, and then Glenn Denning, I mean, I don't know how
he's
you explain
a pain.
His, you know, his performances against the Predators this year, and then, you know, the other 18 games, he's got 1 point. I don't know how you explain 2 goals and 3 assists against the Predators, and you know, and he's got 1 point in the other 18 games. So, but you know, credit him for that. I mean, that's an effort play. I mean, I'd love for my baseball team to watch that play. I know it's hockey and baseball, but that's just all about effort, man.
Yep.
He stuck with it.
Crispy
effort.
Crispy said it best last night on the television broadcast. That guy is a pain in the butt when it comes to playing the Nashville Predators, and he has. I mean, I feel like I hear the name Glenn Denning a lot when they've played the Red Wings this year. So but you're right, effort play, and that's what you got to have. And the Red Wings got the best of the Preds last night, and so split another series, and now you got to shake it off and get back home and see what you can do against Columbus.
The bottom line is, you know, splitting series is not going to get them to where
no.
they need to be. It's
mm-hmm.
just
especially against the Red Wings.
You can't dig the hole. Well, it's not the Red Wings. Like, it's now at this point. I mean, they're, you know, Saturday and Sundays will be games 21 and 22. I mean, we're talking about we're getting, you know, dangerously close to the midway point of a season. So, I mean, you know, splitting series when you're in the position that you're in right now, it doesn't matter whether it's Detroit, yes. It makes it even, you know, tougher pill to swallow. But moving forward, splitting series will not get them where ultimately they want to be. I mean, they're going to have to start stringing together wins. They're going to have to get on a heater, or, you know, it's just not going to happen. But like I said, split series will not get them where they're looking to be, and that's postseason play. And they'll have an opportunity to take two tomorrow and Sunday. And you'll have an opportunity to be in the building on Sunday with us in the noon hour. So be listening in the noon hour. Your chance to win, not qualify, your chance to win a pair of tickets to be in Bridgestone Arena, a 2 o'clock puck drop on Sunday afternoon at Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Blue Jackets. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Titans made some moves yesterday. There's a lot of news around the Titans this week. We'll talk with Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's bring in Terry McCormick, who's been covering the Titans since day one, since they landed here on Nashville soil. TitanInsider.com is where you can find his work. Terry, good morning. How you doing?
I was good, but what is that music you were bringing me up to? Come on, now you got to have something that kicks a little bit, you know?
Not a Kanye West guy?
No,
I think Terry is. He's got his pocket.
Old school.
I know. Terry likes the knack. He wants the knack on there. That's got to be
the Knack, the Cars, you know,
yeah.
Beatles, you know, Kiss. I don't know, just
the Monkees.
Something that I recognize. The Stones, the Who.
You got to read the room there, Elijah.
That's the note. I'll make a specific playlist for Terry.
There you go.
A Terry McCormick playlist.
That I never thought I would hear anybody say to Terry McCormick. You're not a Kanye West guy?
Yeah, that's good music.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, well, who knows? Maybe I'll vote for him next election. He runs again.
You first have to get familiar with his library and then, you know, then consider something bigger like that.
Oh, that's priceless. You're not a Kanye West guy.
Not Kanye West.
Yesterday, Jarrell Casey was told by the Broncos he's no longer a Bronco. He's not a Denver guy. What did you make of that move, and what do you think is left for Jarrell Casey?
Well, I think, you know, it was a move that the Broncos needed to free up some cap space, and he was counting something like $11.7 million against their cap if they had kept him just based on his base salary. So, you know, he's coming off biceps surgery, only played 3 games last year, he's 31 years old. Yeah, you know, at one time he was great with the Titans, but I would seriously doubt if there's a reunion that's going to happen here, but I think he'll land someplace. He'll sign somewhere for an incentive-laden, bargain-price deal. And knowing Jarrell Casey, you know, if anybody is capable of a comeback, you know, he's that type of guy.
Well, okay, so, yeah, I think we all can agree. Probably a 1-year deal for Jarrell Casey, but, okay, you say bargain deal, incentive-laced. Okay, so what do you think is the number? What range do you think he falls into for the next team, in your opinion?
Maybe $4 or $5 million, somewhere in that range. You know, somewhere where he can go, show what he can do. If he has a solid season, maybe parlay that into, you know, another deal.
That's the exact numbers that I used yesterday, Terry. I said he is in a $4 to $5 million a year guy at this point in his career, a 1-year deal. And maybe you could still throw in some incentives with that, but you know, I don't know. I just, my biggest thing with him at his age and what he's done, if you're talking about somebody only offering him like $1.5-2 million, Jarrell Casey's probably going to say, yeah, I'm not coming back for that. Time you take out taxes and my agent and everything, I'm not playing for that. It's not worth it to me. I'll just retire. Like, it's got to be worth it to him.
Exactly. And, you know, Jarrell, you know, he's been in the league now for 10 years, so he knows that, you know, there's probably not another real big payday coming. But if he wants to play football, you know, there are teams out there that will give him a chance to play at the right price.
Ian Rappaport, but you said, let's wrap it up with this. You said you don't believe there's a reunion. You don't think really it's in the cards of a return for Jarrell Casey.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, you know, he – you know, made it sound like he was pretty upset. And I get it, but it's a business. And he made it, he didn't exactly mince words on his way out the door when he said they threw him away like a piece of trash, you know, in trading him for a 7th-round pick and what was basically a salary cap dump.
Yeah. Yesterday, Ian Rappaport reported that the Titans were shopping Isaiah Wilson out there. Ultimately, how do you think what's the closure to this? How does this play out? How does it end?
Well, nobody's going to give him anything for Isaiah Wilson. I mean, you know, I've got an old car that I need to get rid of that the motor blew on, but nobody's going to give me anything for it. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things where, you know, Isaiah Wilson has made his bed and now he's going to have to lie in it. And unfortunately, the Titans are there with him in that regard. They're not going to get anything for him. He's going to, you know, best case scenario is that he grows up a little bit, comes to camp, and proves that he's worth something. Worst case scenario, he hasn't grown up, he comes to camp, and they cut him at the end of training camp because he's just not working out.
They released Adam Humphries yesterday. That was probably the worst kept secret ever, right? I mean, we could all connect that dot that that was going to happen. They also part ways with defensive backs Chris Milton and Breon Borders. What did you make? And they brought in a defensive lineman, Julian Taylor, from the 49ers. I guess that was who he was with last. What did you make of those moves by John Robinson yesterday?
Well, Humphries is the big one, obviously, as you mentioned. He's a guy that battled some injuries, had a concussion that ended his season early in 2020. I think he's going to hook on somewhere else. He's still young enough, and, you know, it. From what I can gather, and the Titans certainly weren't very forthcoming a couple of weeks ago with information on Adam Humphries' situation, he is healthy now, wants to play. So he's still just 27 years old. Somebody will end up giving him a shot, and he could go in the right system with the right quarterback. He could go and be a productive guy if he can stay healthy. He was going to count $6.75 million in base salary this year, so the Titans are already pretty snug against what's going to be a lowered cap, and so they really had no choice in the matter. Now, with Adam Humphries gone, and depending on what they do with Corey Davis, hey, the Titans are in the market for wide receivers. They're going to have to add at least two. You know, it's, you know, if one of those is Corey Davis, fine, then they add one. But the thing is, other than A.J. Brown, they don't really have any reliable guys in that wide receiver core that are currently under contract and on this roster. So it'll be interesting to see what they do draft-wise and free agency-wise at a position that was actually fairly productive the last couple of years.
Terry McCormick is with us, TitanInsider.com. And, Terry, we've seen this throughout history, and I don't know if there's any scenario, but just give me your feel for it. If there's no market for Adam Humphries and he's sitting around looking for a job and the Titans could get him back at a way reduced price, is that even in the cards? Is that a possibility at all?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out. I think somebody's going to give Adam Humphries a chance and a contract, but if he can't find work anywhere, I mean, the Titans obviously know him better than anyone other than maybe Tampa Bay because they had him on the roster the past 2 years. So I think if August rolls around and Adam Humphries is not on a roster, the Titans could do a lot worse than to bring him back at a lesser rate.
So, Terry, let's turn our attention to J.J. Watt. I found it very interesting that the report comes out yesterday, and I'm guessing it's from J.J. Watt's agent in some form, that he's had an offer of $15 million per year. That sounds a little high to me at this stage of his career, but what do you think?
That sounds a lot high to me. I think at this time of year, you get a lot of that agent talk of pie in the sky type of stuff. Remember last summer, there was the talk that Jadeveon Clowney wasn't going to sign with anybody for less than $20 million, and he winds up signing with Tennessee for $12 million. So, you know, if J.J. Watt can find somebody to pay him $15 million a year, then he probably should jump on that right now. I think what you actually are going to see in J.J. Watt, he's going to get a nice payday. I mean, he's not completely washed up. He's not somebody that is, if he can stay healthy, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could get you 8 to 10 sacks. And I think what J.J. Watt is looking for is a chance to go to the Super Bowl. He's not going to sign with the Jets. He's not going to sign with the Cardinals. He wants to go to the Super Bowl. He's going to find a team that will use him the right way and that has a chance to make a deep, deep push in January and February. So I think that's what's out there to keep an eye on. J.J. Watt is not in the soup line hurting for money. You know, the payday will be there, and it'll be what it is, but I think he wants to win a championship.
Let's just take the guy at his word that there is a $15 million offer out there, which I don't know if that's true. Like, I'd love to know what team did that, but and who has that kind of money to offer to J.J. Watt. But if that's true, what is your offer for the Titans? If you're saying, okay, you know, the market looks pretty good for J.J., we're going to have to step forward here if we want him. What's your best offer?
Maybe somewhere in the 10 to 12 range, somewhere in
the. So you'd go that high to, with their cap situation to get him.
But, well, to do it first, I think you have to clear out the cap space. You know, you're not going to be able to get the guy and put him on your roster without having the cap space and that situation already remedied. But you could do a contract where you give him $10 or $12 million and you could make it work. J.J. Watt could come in, and I mean, they gave Jadeveon Clowney 12 and Vic Beasley 9 last year and got nothing from either of those guys. I think that whatever you get out of J.J. Watt is going to be a lot better than what you got from those two. So, you know, if they could make $10 million work, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Is that money better thrown at J.J. Watt or one of the other guys? We talked a lot about Bud Dupree earlier this week. There's some other guys out there. If you're going to make a play for one guy, who's the best guy to put that kind of money towards?
That's a good question. You know, there's some people that really like Matthew Judon of the Ravens. There's some people who, like you said, like Bud Dupree. You know, I like Ngakoue, who I think is also maybe a free agent. You know, there's some good guys out there that you could put a lot of money toward. There's one that I'm missing, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. It's Shaq Barrett of the Bucks. You know,
sure.
That guy lit it up in the playoffs, and if you get that anywhere close to that type of production, that's a game changer. But you know, they're probably going to command a whole lot more money on the market right now than J.J. Watt. Some of those guys are, just because they're younger and they're coming off more productive seasons.
We're talking to Terry McCormick of TitanInsider.com, and as Darren mentioned, Terry, you've covered this team since day one, so you've been through the Floyd Reese days of restructuring contracts and trying to move as much money around as possible to keep things together. With the COVID-type year and the situation that they're in, with some of these other candidates that could be cut, could you see a scenario where John Robinson is able to restructure with a Malcolm Butler or a Ben Jones, some of Roger Saffold, some of the other names that have come up that could possibly be cut? Could you see more of a restructured type thing coming down the pike?
Yeah, I could see that, and here's why. You know, for one thing, I think they want to keep as much of this team intact and operational as possible, because I think they feel like that their window of opportunity is right now, because Derrick Henry's in his prime, Ryan Tannehill's still in his prime, A.J. Brown is emerging as one of the top receivers in the league. If you can re-sign Corey Davis or Jonnu Smith, one of those guys could still be a big part of this offense. The line was pretty solid last year and even managed to survive Taylor Lewan being injured. But you look at guys like Malcolm Butler, Roger Saffold, like you mentioned, Lewan, Ben Jones, some of those guys are candidates for restructure. And I think probably the best thing to do in restructuring is to push that money out, because assuming that things get somewhat back to normal and there's going to be a more conventional season in 2021 than what we saw last year with the COVID and, you know, some stadiums completely empty and others with only about 10,000 fans in them and stuff, assuming there is a point where, you know, stadiums can be full or close to full again, then you would assume that the salary cap is going to jump back up into where it was pre-COVID or somewhere close to that. So that would give you a chance to absorb that money in 2022, 2023, those sorts of things, if you want to rework some of those high-dollar deals now.
What were your thoughts on the report? I saw Dan Graziano had it from ESPN that Damaris Smith told NFL player agents that they should work together or collude on, you know, contracts so the owners don't take advantage of the COVID situation and the smaller salary cap when deals come. Because we've talked about, you know, it could be a lot of one-year deals and guys taking less because of the salary cap situation. So what do you make of the PA and how they're trying to work behind the scenes?
Well, that's probably smart on his part to formulate that plan, but probably not real smart on his part to let it get out and get reported publicly. Because, you know, the big C word, as you mentioned, collusion, is not something that is looked upon very, very pleasingly by the league or by the courts. So, you know, you don't want to go down that path if you're the Players Association and the league. So it's a situation where I think that the Players Association's got to, and D'Amore Smith have to kind of tread lightly here. They can do some of that, but they better be a little more discreet about it.
So as you look at this offseason for John Robinson, and we've said it's probably the most it is the most important offseason of his tenure here, but knowing the restrictions that he has from a financial standpoint, you know, what's realistic for this team when it comes to still being able to compete, still being able to, you know, try and win a division and go further than the AFC title game like they did a couple of years ago, knowing that you have to fix the defense and that the offense, just based on how things work, they're going to probably take a little bit of a step back. In your mind, what do you think is a realistic expectation for what he's going to be able to do?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that he's just got to be able to hit on the free agents and the draft picks that come in. They've got to get more contribution from the people who are coming in from the outside to add to the core group that was still there from 2019. Last year, the pieces they added contributed virtually nothing, whether it was Isaiah Wilson or Vic Beasley. They got a little bit out of Jadeveon Clowney before he got hurt. Other draft picks like Darrington Evans and Christian Fulton didn't contribute much because they were hurt. I think you have to hope that at least a couple of those guys jump to the forefront and start taking on meaningful roles beyond, you know, a couple of snaps here or there and playing a little bit of special teams. So I think you got to hope that some of your 2020 draft picks bounce back, and you got to hope that you do a better job of assessing the newcomers that are coming in, both in the draft and free agency in 2021.
In your opinion, what is John Robinson's next move? What's the next move that we're talking about?
I think he's still got to clean out and do a couple of more bookkeeping things to get them under the salary cap once he knows what it is. Then once they're comfortably under the salary cap, the next move will be whether or not to franchise anybody. I think I've seen some people say that it might be a good idea to franchise Jonnu Smith, because I think that number would be around $9.7 million. To me, that's kind of steep, you know, with the franchise tag. But they've got to make that decision as to whether or not they want to use the franchise tag or try to figure out ways to make competitive offers to Smith and Corey Davis.
Terry, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Stay dry. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com is where you can find his work. A lot of things to unpack after that. But first, Chase, you're going to go vroom, vroom.
Yes, I am. And I've been excited to be able to talk about this over the last few days. You can be a part of sports and entertainment history as the inaugural Music City Grand Prix roars into Nashville August 6th. Through the 8th. The three-day International Festival of Speed and Sound will bring the biggest stars in music, food, and, of course, racing. The IndyCar Series, Jimmy Johnson, Joseph Newgarden, Helio Castroneves, they're all going to be coming to Nashville. Secure your Music City Grand Prix three-day ticket package now, starting at $119 by logging on to MusicCityGP.com or Ticketmaster.com. The Music City Grand Prix Festival experience will offer something for everyone. You don't want to miss the new sound of Nashville, so visit MusicCityGP.com or Ticketmaster.com. Tickets are on sale now. You can get your three-day ticket package to this summer's fastest event.
We'll head up to Columbus at 11 o'clock. We'll talk about the opponent of the Predators Saturday and Sunday at Bridgestone Arena. You'll have an opportunity to be in the building with the three of us coming up in the noon hour. You'll also have the ability to get some free beer sometime today. You just made the list. We got all kinds of things, all kinds of giveaways, including if you want to watch the Preds games in style, tune in a little bit later to the show. And we'll give you a key word for you to text in on our game line, which is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That number is 615-737-1025, and you'll have a chance to win a T-Mobile hockey home gate. It's your chance to watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing Bundt Cakes, and a T-Mobile prize pack, and food for your home gate. The only thing is, the catch, you have to be 21 years of age or older to enter, and you have to be listening to the show. That's it. That's how simple it is.
It's that easy.
All right, let's talk about some things that we unpacked with Terry McCormick. Not his choice in music, but the Titans. So the Titans made some moves yesterday, like I said, in the interview with him. You know, we've been saying basically since the season ended, it was pretty easy to see. Obviously, the first dot to connect was, you know, the unfortunate release of Adam Humphries. It's just there's no way they could afford him anymore. They made that official yesterday. A couple of other guys in the secondary going by the wayside. Doesn't really help them much with the cap. But just all the things that we discussed in that interview, what stood out? Where do we want to go? There's a lot to unpack.
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that really we have to figure out is who's going to go, you know, besides Adam Humphries, who's going to join him?
Who's the next logical choice? Because like I said, the three of us nailed Adam Humphries. Okay, what's the next one we can all say that one's coming? Is there one? Is there one that's
yeah,
that obvious?
I think it's Kenny Vaccaro.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he's in the same category as Adam Humphries?
I think so.
For different reasons.
I agree with you.
It's simply a business move for him. You hate losing that production. But if you – it's so the dead money would be $3 million if you cut Kenny Vaccaro. And so that would save you about $7 million, I believe, give or take. But it's just the money, and you have more depth behind him. I mean, Amani Hooker is ready for that role. He's ready for prime time. And so as much as you would hate to lose the hard-hitting production of Kenny Vaccaro, you at least have a guy behind him that can play that position. And it's going to have to step up. Going to have to take it to a whole nother level now. But I think that's the most logical one in my mind. And it's not because of production. It's just simply a business move.
I think there's more than that. Too, you know, it's interesting, Chase. You've started to do it, right? You've been doing it this way. I made the reference point of when people are saying, "Hey, is such and such a team on the bubble? Are they going to get in the NCAA tournament?" And somebody says, "Oh yeah, they should be in, right? They're 17-9, and they're 9-8, or they're 9-5 in their league. That sounds like a resume that should be in. They beat so and so." But you've got to do it in the context of taking a sheet of paper and writing down the 68 spots, and then you start seeing who really has the resume. It's all relative to everything else. I don't know that I have really comprehended the fact that the cap is going down, and for the last couple years, the GMs around the league projected the cap would not only not go down, but be higher, like, you know, go up a certain staircase every year. So there's some harsh things, there's some harsh realities that I'm not sure I even wrap my arms around until you really started doing the math. And Chase, you've done it. I thought Joe Rexroad's article in The Athletic is really a stark reality.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he did the math, you know, he had, yeah, I know the three of us have kicked around, well, would you rather have this guy or this guy? What about this guy or this guy? When Joe did the math, and if his math is anywhere close to accurate, it's not just going to be Humphries and Vaccaro. There's, you know, according to Joe, he's got Humphries, Vaccaro, Ben Jones,
yep,
and either Malcolm Butler or Adoree Jackson. All those guys gone.
Yeah, and I mean, you probably have to restructure Saffold. You know, I mean that's another.
Yes.
That's another
and
one.
I do think that is. That is something they're going to have to do.
Let me correct myself. I've done this so much lately. The math runs together and the numbers run together. You would save about close to $4 million with Kenny Vaccaro because of the dead cap hit. So you wouldn't quite save $7 million. It would be about
right.
$4 million,
but $3 million in dead money, and it's about $7 million that you're shedding. So that's a plus.
It's about
minus
a $4 million.
Four.
Yeah. So just wanted to correct that. But there's so many different candidates, and the thing with Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson. Is on paper you go, well, you keep Adoree Jackson because he's younger. All right. But the production that you got out of Malcolm Butler last year blows
far exceeded Adoree Jackson.
Right. Now you have to hope, do you get that again?
Yep.
But because somebody may be like, well, you take Adoree Jackson away, and he wasn't here last year. He did nothing. He did absolutely nothing for this team. He didn't play for a majority of the year, and then when he did play, he was a body on the field. That's what he was. So I go with the, I don't care that he's younger. You're saving the same amount either way. It's going to be about, you know, the dead cap hit for Malcolm would be $4 million, so you're saving $10 if you do that. And then if you rescind the fifth-year option, you're saving $10 million. There is no dead cap with Adoree Jackson. I'm doing that. I'm getting rid of Adoree Jackson all day long if I have to choose between the two. Even though Malcolm Butler is older, I would rather do that because I know the production that I've gotten out of Malcolm Butler.
I think the one thing that also jumps out at me, and I don't believe I was unfair. I was very critical of Adoree Jackson after he came back. And it was, like I said, I thought it was very fair. And it's nothing against him. I think I like him. I've enjoyed our conversations with him over the years, but it just simply wasn't good enough. Forget the fact that Malcolm Butler was upright and available all year and played really well. The best season he's had since he's been here. And Adoree Jackson was barely even a factor. The other thing that you have to factor in is Malcolm Butler's got dog in him. Does Adoree Jackson have dog in him?
Nope.
Butler has the mentality that you're looking for. Okay, all day long, he's got dog. Does Adoree Jackson have dog? Is he gonna magically poof get it in year five? Is that how it works? I don't think Adoree Jackson's always been a knock on him.
I would like to pull back the lens a little bit because we know those two guys really well. I think we know the answer to your question. We've discussed it, right? We've watched these guys play. I think the real question is for John Robinson, with the situation that is in front of him, right? And the situation around the league, he's not the only GM that is going to have to do this,
mm-mm,
right?
Nope.
So the market is going to be flooded with a lot of pretty good players, right?
Yep.
We can sit here and say Adoree Jackson is not worth $10 million or whatever, and maybe, you know, he's going to be cut. But he's worth something to somebody. But what is the market for all these guys? According to Joe, in his article, he's got a scenario where not only all these guys we mentioned already are cut, who are under contract, but also the pending free agents, all these guys are gone. Corey Davis gone. Jayon Brown gone. Desmond King gone. Daquan Jones gone. Perhaps Jonnu Smith with the transition tag, but you heard Terry say it. You know, it's a pretty expensive thing, even though he's a really good player. So you have like as many as, what does that add up to? Like 8 to 10 starters from last year that are all gone. You got to replace them all, but if it's happening all around the league, then the price for a starter somewhere is going to come down a big peg.
Yeah.
Right? So what's the market for all these guys? You might have to let them all go and let it sort itself out. You might even get a chance to bring a couple of them back.
I thought that was a really good question by you to Terry, because I do think that that's not crazy to think, not for everybody, but it's not crazy to think that just because of what the market's going to be. You know, somebody like Adam Humphries is a great example of, he may sit out there for a while and, you know, not, and just teams look at him and go, I had a concussion. I don't want to risk it. Just not worth it. And the longer he sits out there, then you circle back and go, well, hey, we'll bring you back for X amount. And because, you know, we know you.
A Mikhail Granlund kind of move.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
You're getting him for $2 million less. He's the same guy, but you're getting him for $2 million less. If you could have that concept for a couple of those guys, and you're probably going to find some other guys in the category of Eric Halla, not that Eric Halla has done much for the Predators, but a guy that has been a good player that's sitting out there, nobody wants him, and you get him at a really good bargain price, just because there's so many guys out there. I think that could happen in this situation that the Titans are
in. Isn't it amazing how we feel about Granlund with $2 million less?
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, look, it's we've said it. It's not fair, but you have to know that when you sign those deals. Like, that's how you get judged. And nobody said it was fair, but when he's 5.75, you don't feel as good, right? But when he's 3.75, you feel a whole lot better, because I'm not sure Granlund's really any different than he was last year, but he's $2 million less of a year a player, and mm-hmm. people feel better about that. It feels more like that's the right number, right? It just that's how a fan base, the media, when you talk about players, that's usually how it operates.
That's how it operates, but it's also for the GM. I mean, yes. the GM who has to get the most out of the dollars, you have to have those guys, right? You have to have guys that are performing at the right price and hopefully outperforming their contract, and not too many guys that are underperforming based on what you're investing. It's, you know, it's what the game has become in all the salary cap leagues. It was different, and baseball maybe is the last one where there's still a few teams that can just spend over a problem. Hey, I overpaid this guy. He's not doing well. I'll just replace him with another guy. There's not as many ramifications, especially if you're willing to pay the luxury tax.
Right. But,
so who's the number one candidate to – let's go under this premise that we're talking about. Let's go under this window. The most likely candidate to actually be brought back would be whom?
After being cut?
Correct. Well, not necessarily. No, in this case, we're talking about the guys going to free agents.
Free agents or cuts, because eventually they'll all be going, free agents.
Yes.
Right? Whether they are currently a free agent or cut, they will be in the same pool. Available players.
Okay.
Who feels strong enough with their answer to go first? Like who is the best? Who would be the most likely candidate to either be cut or go to free agency but get brought back on a lesser price? All the names we've thrown out there.
That's tough.
I know.
Well,
it is.
I'll say this. I think Ben Jones is one of those prime restructure candidates. I just feel like he's a team player. He's, you know, and it's just moving money around, as we've talked about. But I think that he's one of those guys that he's going to work with the Titans, and the Titans are going to work with him, and they're going to figure it out. So I don't know if that you put that in that category. I don't think they cut him and then bring him back. I just think they figure it out and restructure. So I just want to throw that out there. But to answer your actual question, because we've all said Jonnu Smith, we believe tag.
Well, I started
you
that
said
on Monday.
You said that. Yeah, you started that.
Week.
Yeah, you
all
started
week.
That, and I've jumped on. So
and I'm not going away from that. I do think that.
No, I think you're 100%.
100% the best move for Jonnu Smith. It buys you another year. It's just a little bit over $8 million. And a guy of his caliber in this league is absolutely worth it. That's just the going rate. That's what you would have to pay. But you only have to do it for a year, and then you get to reassess, right?
Right.
See where you are.
Man, I don't know. I mean, cut candidate.
I'm going to give you a last name of somebody you've already mentioned, but it's a different guy. What about Daquan Jones?
I thought the same thing.
Back at a cheaper price.
I don't know what the market is for him.
I don't either, but let's say you get him for a much cheaper price. What about Daquan Jones? I feel pretty good going with that.
Yeah, I don't hate that either.
Because we've established, like, it's fun to talk about Jarrell Casey. We really enjoyed getting to know Jarrell Casey over the years, but it's probably not realistic. It's not in the cards. He's not going to be back here. So that guy to play alongside Simmons, they know what Daquan Jones is all about. He's a great team player. He's a great guy. They get production out of him, and if you can get him for a lesser price, I think there's that's who I would be willing to go with.
I think these are all important questions, because it leads to the other question. And that we tackled with Terry is, I think this is the question that Joe's bringing up in his article in The Athletic too, is are we just miscalculating here? Is it pie in the sky that they could really throw decent money at any of these pass rush guys that we're hoping they could get one of?
Yeah.
Right? Do they have the budget to even put together a package that's competitive?
And that's why too, you know, with the rumors that they're shopping Isaiah Wilson, even though you're not going to get anything for him, if you get a sixth or a seventh, you get that off the books. And that right there, with the position that they're in, is
that's
sadly worth it.
That's an asset. Well, that's right. Why, you know, when the Predators traded P.K. Subban, and you're like, they got two second-round picks, and they got a couple of minor leaguers. That's it. You know, but right. That was the.
But you got $9 million.
But you
off
got
the books.
You cleared the cap space. That's that would be the principle in something like that.
So Daquan Jones.
It wasn't just nine. What was he? How many years did he have left?
Yeah, he had a lot left.
I was gonna say it wasn't just $9 million. Yeah. But for, remember, these NFL's not guaranteed. NHL guaranteed.
They, right.
You got rid of a lot of money.
So Daquan signed a 3-year, $21 million deal. That was his last contract.
Okay.
So average
so let's
seven,
say
$7
million. Million? Okay. So,
so
let's
he made,
say.
He made $7 million last year, and it was one of those that with bonuses, like hit, the first year of the deal, it was $4 million. The cap hit was 5.3, and then it went to 7.3. Last year, the cap hit was 8.3.
What about 4.5? Anybody feel good about Daquan for next year, 4.5?
Yeah.
Okay,
see,
is that the cap hit, or is that the – how are you structuring it? Like, are
one-year deal.
But what's bonus? What's – because the bonus – if you give him a signing bonus, that doesn't – hurt you on the cap
hold
side.
On, I'm texting Ben Marino. Get his answer. I got to wait for his answer.
Or it does, I guess.
How this works. That's just too four, much.
4.5. Yeah, I'd do that. I would do that. 4.5.
I kind of feel the same way.
One year, four.
Doesn't
and a half.
That feel exactly like Willie, the example Willie threw out there? Doesn't that feel like Granlund? Right?
Yeah.
Like everybody knows what he's all about, and he comes back and he's. It's a little bit cheaper, and you know what you're going to get out of him, and you feel good about that, right?
I would feel good about whether it's Daquan Jones or a couple of these other guys. If I could set the price based on what we know, it's the devil you know, right? That's the old saying. You know what a guy gives you. You know how he fits in your system, although we know also that the system's going to change a little bit, especially on offense, right? The defensive system, you pretty well know – how a guy fits, how he's been used, how you want to use him, and that's the X factor when you bring somebody from the outside, is that you might think you know where he fits in your scheme, but do you really until you get him there? Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
We'll talk to former player, now Columbus color analyst. We'll head up to Ohio, talk about this Blue Jackets team that's coming in this weekend to kick off the second hour. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next.